Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and today I'm joined by my co-hosts, Andrew Batista and my brother Barney, of course. Barney, you weren't able to join us on the Mourinho pod, but it's been a couple of weeks. How you been?
Yeah, good. Very good. I got a message from my school, my old school friend the other day, and he's the football team he now plays for was training at my old school, and I don't know where he was on the football pitch, but like he sent me a picture of this pink squidgy football with like the kids' names written on, and it was my school had this weird rule where you weren't allowed proper footballs; you had to buy from the school these pink squidgy air balls almost.
Yeah.
And they still have that rule. And so there's like this 15 years later, but he sent me that picture. I mean, it was so nostalgic. Like, I don't know. It's just like, yeah, these weird, like they're like, almost like dodgeballs, I guess, in sort of texture. And like, that was the only balls we were allowed to play with at school. And, you know, you got pretty good with them. Like, you know, if you give me an air ball now, I'd be pretty good. But it was a very, very nostalgic feeling just to see that ball and like to know that they're still doing that, like, you know.
Well, this is visionary stuff because they're testing your close control, surely. This is, you know, it's much harder to control the ball with your feet. It bounces off your feet. So this is like training from an early age to keep the ball tight to your feet. And then when you use the real footballs, you'll have a wonderful technique. I mean, I don't know where it went wrong for you, obviously. But
what's the Adidas ball? Is it Samba ball? But yeah, and the jogger, yeah. But seeing that pink ball, that's the one for me.
Yeah, it can take you back. I mean, I recently had the League of Portugal football, which I used to play my seven sides, and then they got blasted over the fence. So, alas, no more. I did score one little backheel with that ball, so that will live long in the memory. But anyway, Andrew, still living the high life in Portugal, enjoying it while it lasts. And a good weekend for your boys as well. So, things still looking good for you, I guess?
Happy as always, and long may it continue.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to, as always, run you through all the big games from the weekend. And we'll start, as we always do, at the top of the table with Porto, who kept their season rolling in fine style with a 3-0 win away at Rio Ave. Two early goals from corners set the tone for the game. And then a final nail in the coffin from Gabriel Vega sealed the deal. It could have been probably a lot bigger scoreline as well without some great saves from the Real Ave goalkeeper, Mishta. He bailed out some questionable defending at times from his Real Ave teammates, but a very, very solid performance, Andrew, and a very well-deserved win for the league leaders. The positive performances keep rolling in, and it's great to see.
Yeah, and another sort of dominant professional performance from Porto. We saw very much the same sort of team from the previous game, except Gabriel Vieira started, and it was his show. You know, he got the two assists, he got the goal. His delivery is fantastic. You know, whether it's from a corner or just in open play, he's already showed that. And this was really the game that showed us why he was so highly rated when he was at Celta Vigo, and why, you know, it's great to get these kind of players in now at this point in their career, because I think he will go on to do great things. He's such a talented player. Some other things we saw in this game was Pablo Rosario having a really a standout performance. This is his second game starting at right back, and I think that's what he's going to kind of be in terms of his place in this team, will be a kind of utility player, someone that will play when is needed. I'm not sure he's going to be able to get into that midfield, barring some injury or something. I'd like to see him in midfield just to see what he can contribute and exactly how he will interpret the role. But, you know, you don't want to be messing with that midfield at the moment because it's doing really well. Alan Varela for Holt and Gabriel Vieira. So, yeah, Rosario had a great game at right back. He might play there in the midweek in Europe, but we know Albert Koch is back training, so he could be on the bench, he could start. It depends how close he is to sort of match fitness. Another good performance from the centre-backs, or the Kvyat and Bednarek, even though they weren't given a lot to do, when they were called upon, they did really well. And yeah, we keep rolling on. And what's very good about the Sporting team is not just the the dominance that they're showing in most games, but the consistency. They keep doing the same things right. They keep the intensity high. They start games with high energy. They press a lot. They know what they're doing when they're in possession. They know how to build their attacks. And I think that's helping a lot of players that maybe sometimes struggle with maybe inconsistency and overthinking. When the team around you is more consistent, it's easier for you as a player to know what to do every single time. And I think that you see Pepe benefiting from that a lot. You know, Pepe is a guy that's been hot and cold for years, and I can't remember him having this sort of run where he's contributing every game. You know, there was that great pass to Gabri Veiga for his goal that came from Pepe, that little dink. And every game he is contributing now. So it's easy to get giddy as a Porto fan. But I think Farioli said it well at the end of the game when he said, you know, there's a lot of work to do when, you know, this is a tough league. And he was just tempering everyone's expectations, which is the right thing to do because there is a long way to go. You've got a Sporting team who get better every game. You've got a Benfica team who are going to now improve. You know, they got one of the best managers to ever do it now in the dugout. You've got Moreirense doing well, Jovicic doing well. Braga will figure their problems out eventually. They're a very good team. But for now, all you can do is just keep doing what you're doing, which is what Porto are doing. They did play quite a toothless Liwav team that didn't generate a lot. They had one or two good chances, but they are not impressive at all this season. You know, three draws and two losses, I think it is, so far,
And they
not
play
very good.
Benfica tonight, so it doesn't look like it's going to get better anytime soon.
Yeah, exactly. They play Benfica tonight. I'm not sure what the direction is of this Liwav team. You know, we've spoken about them being in this sort of multi-club structure with Nottingham Forest and Olympiacos. But they seem to be the kind of afterthought and the other team that, you know, that they kind of they don't have a clear direction. And all the good things they have done this season have centered around Clayton doing a lot of individual work, and he's a very good striker. He can do that. André Luiz doing a lot of individual work. Another standout is probably Brandon Aguilera, who, you know, is I think a Forest player, if I'm not mistaken. But otherwise, I'm not really sure what the season's going to look like for them, because 3 points at this point, and it's not going to get any easier, and they don't seem to be improving game on game or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really excellent point. I mean, Barney Weir is a team that we've discussed quite a lot, you know, over the season, and especially last season. But I think the thing that worries me about them is having the same conversations again this season that I think we had quite a lot last season, which is about a team where, not for lack of individual quality, I mean, you look at the team sheets that they're able to put together, some of the players that are starting for those teams. I mean, Clayton is, for me, one of the best strikers in the league for any team, and that's a great asset to have up front. They've got, I mean, you know, all these kind of individuals, Aguilera, like Andrew says, even at the back, they played a player like Nelson Abe, who is a player with great quality individually. Even that English left back, I'm sure you'll remember his name, I slipped my mind, but from Forest, a number of individuals. I mean, but the same conversation that we had last year, the team's not gelling. They don't have the cohesiveness. They just, I mean, toothless was a great word, Andrew. They just don't have that kind of cutting edge. I mean, we're going to talk about Moreirense soon, and that's a team who I think don't necessarily have better individual quality in players, but they're much better able to put together threatening attacks, even against a team of Sporting's caliber. And yet, a team like Rio Ave, who ironically lost to Moreirense last week, I don't think on paper those are two teams that should be as far apart in form as they are. But there's a wealth of a gap between those two types of teams. So yeah, it's bad at the moment.
Yeah, I know we sort of keep coming to the multi-club ownership point, and you know the amount of players coming in, but there is still a quite a big chunk of players who have been there a little while now. Aguilera, Clayton, who we've mentioned, Mitster was there last season. Maybe even people on the bench like Pullman, who they signed from Borussia Dortmund. So there's this confusing thing where that you know that there is some personnel change. It still feels, as you said, there's quality players in this squad who have just never really. Apart from Clayton, obviously, I feel like have made their mark. I mean, Aguilera is one in particular who I really like. I like watching him play. He's a nice football player, but he's sort of not. I don't think he's suited for that, being part of that two man central midfield in a sort of 3-4-3 formation. And that's another sort of interesting thing, which is perhaps down to the multi-club ownership and the sort of the guidance they're getting from the other clubs. The fact that they've been so rigid in this formation now, despite having a couple of different managers. Richards, the left back, I think you're alluding to, Albert, is one, like, there's a couple of players, not him, Aguero, who I mentioned, but who might be suited to different systems, but perhaps they're being sort of told, you've got to stick with this, to if, in terms of like what we want you to do with the players that we're sending you. I don't know. It's messy. I just have a feeling that I think Clayton will probably move on in January. I can see that happening, and then I think they could be in real trouble. And then I guess that's the other thing we have to remember, that it wasn't too long ago that they were relegated, and it was a surprise then. I think it would be less of a surprise now, and it would be a real shame and a, not a good reflection on the what's happened to the, with Rio Ave. I mean, just to bring it back to Porto quickly, Albert, because Gabriel Veiga was brilliant. I love watching him in this game. I think my favorite part of this match, though, was a pass from Rodrigo Moura about the 80th minute, which just like cut right through the middle of the pitch and sent, I think it was Pepe on his way. And I think Vega, as Andrew described, is just, he's just so good. Like, I actually feel like you notice him not being here when he was injured in the last few games. And although Rodrigo Moura is always great to watch, Vega just looks like a cut above. I think he's absolutely fantastic. Really, really impressed with him. And then another point I wanted to make is, I guess it's with my sort of Premier League hat on and the way Arsenal have been talked about in recent seasons about getting on top of set pieces. It feels like I haven't really thought of a Portuguese team doing that, right? And this was a perfect example of how Porto could be really dangerous in that area. There's some big players in there that, like Andrew said, the delivery from Vega is so good. It's obviously something that they would have been working on. But with Kirio coming into the team, there's big players in there. It's really effective, and it obviously really, really helps a team having that in their arsenal to do that. So yeah, I think that's a really interesting aspect of Porto, because the play's been fantastic. Like, there's so many opportunities created. There's great runs across the pitch, and then also to have, like, we can just stick it on the big man. Like, that's great. And I've been so impressed with Porto this year. It's just a breath of fresh air. And I think Andrew mentioned the everyone knowing what to do. I think the other thing to add to that is these players are really confident right now. Like, and that helps with the new players coming in, like wanting to prove themselves. But yeah, Pepe is a prime example, right? They're really, really confident.
And healthy competition for places as well, which I think is good, especially with the likes of Rodrigo Moura and William Gomes and players like that who are not necessarily guaranteed starters, but kind of great quality players to have to bring off the bench. I mean, imagine being able to bring Rodrigo Moura off the bench. It's an incredible, incredible asset. Before we move on, Andrew, the one aspect that I think about Porto's game that we've perhaps not discussed or given enough credit, perhaps, is the defensive side, because I believe you guys have only conceded one goal in the league this whole season, and that was an own goal against Sporting, which was itself not even a kind of quite an avoidable own goal in many ways. So it's quite an impressive feat, particularly when you consider the injury situation. There's still injuries at the back. I mean, even in this game, we saw Zaidu Sanusi having to fill in at right back due to the kind of squad rotation. Part of that, of course, is down to the personnel. I mean, when you look at the arrivals of Alberto Costa, Bednarek, and Kivior, I think that's three big signings at the back who all walk into the starting 11 and improve the player that they've replaced. And to be able to do that, I think is fantastic. But they haven't always been able to play with that combination of the best players, and still the defense has been really, really solid. So, yeah, I don't know what you make of that.
Yeah, and even Nuno Pérez, when he was playing before Kivior came in, he put in some really good performances. It also helps we have one of the best goalkeepers in the league, so that helps, and that makes your defense even more confident in in what's, you know, in what their job is. And you've got Alan Varela, who's been able to stay fit, and he's really been great this season, breaking up play, but also sort of joining in the press. And also that constant press that Porto do, that is a way of defending. That is a way of making sure you don't have to do a lot of defending on the back
Absolutely.
end. And that's a really important thing. So if you win the ball up high a bunch, then you don't have to really win it, you know, in your own half, because it's not really going to get there as much. So I think there's a few things that are sort of contributing to this great defensive start of the season. It is very impressive. We'll see how long we can keep this sort of defense fully fit. I hope we can. You know, Alberto Costa is on the way back. Martin Fernandes is also back in training, which is really
Important.
great because that'll change how everything works on that left-hand side. As good as Francisco Mori is, you know, you sort of lose something on that side with him in playing. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I think if we can keep the centre backs fit and Alan Varela, who I think is quite important in there as well, we could, you know, you want to keep this kind of defensive record going because it makes it easier for your attackers as well. You know, you don't want to like put too much pressure on your attackers. If you start conceding, it's a whole thing. And right now the team feel really confident that they can keep the goals out and keep putting goals on the, you know, on the other side of the pitch.
Yeah, and it does feel like there still have been obstacles and hurdles to overcome in this early part of the season, particularly with injuries and all that kind of thing. And nothing has slowed the momentum yet. So, you know, even with this period with players out and all that kind of stuff, if the good results keep coming and then the players start coming back, I think there's real reason to be kind of excited and optimistic as the season goes on, not just at home but in Europe as well, which of course kicks off this week. So, you know, as always, very exciting times for Porto. We look forward to seeing how that continues in the next few weeks. Let's move on to talk about Sporting. Unfortunately, Kev's not here to join us this week, so we can't get his perspective. So, gents, it's free rein to say what you want without Kev here. No, I'm sure we'll all be very complimentary because it was a very good game between Sporting and Warrens. And apart from, it's interesting, from my perspective, apart from, of course, that Clásico between Sporting and Porto at earlier in the season, that went in Porto's favour, outside of that result, it has largely been neck and neck from the league's two top sides this season, often matching each other's results, as they did so in this game. Sporting also winning 3-0 against Morelense, who were the league's fourth place side before the game started. Far from an easy game on paper. And Sporting did have to be patient. They dominated a lot of the ball and created a lot of big chances, but it wasn't until a 76th minute penalty when the deadlock was finally broken, and then an additional penalty in the 90th minute sealed the deal before a 94th minute nail in the coffin from Soteris Ioannidis sealed the victory for Sporting. If it wasn't for some serious goalkeeping heroics, it probably would have looked a lot more comfortable, but it was a hard-earned victory for Sporting against a very tricky side. Barney, I'll throw it over to you to kick this one off. What did you make of the game?
Yeah, there was an amazing performance from Andre Ferreira in goal for Morens. I couldn't help watch this game and see and just think about Luis Suarez. And I think, of course, this was always going to happen at some point, but just a couple of the chances that he failed to put away, you know, and obviously.
Barney, would you be shocked if I said some people were calling him the Colombian Paulinho?
Oh.
I've got a shout out Sam Fonseca for that
Oh,
one. Is it too early? Is it too early, Barney, to
it's a
say
little bit too.
that?
No, I think, and it's I think actually it maybe it's unfair to highlight him because I was just checking out the some of the XG for the Sporting players, and you know, him, Pedro Gonçalves and Trincão are all marginally underperforming their XG, and yeah, they're always going to have a lot of chances, of course, but I guess the difference between Sporting and Porto this season so far, it has felt like Sporting are just, I don't know, they seem to be frustrated more in matches, I guess, and and with that guess becomes the danger of, you know, these frustrations leading to the draw, the slight drop of points, and so yeah, you want a striker like Jokeres, who like is just the monster and will finish every chance he basically gets. So yeah, Suarez is gonna be under the spotlight for a little while, and of course, Ian just came on to score, and that's I think that's a good bit of business because it adds that competition, and it's someone they can bring on to help, change games if they need to. I've also been impressed by the winger Alisson Santos as well when he's come on. That's another option, a different player they can bring on to try and change the game. So I don't think there's too much to worry about at the moment, but I don't know. There just seems to be a slight feeling watching Sporting at the moment where it might take that little bit longer to get the first goal. And then I think that's where, and of course they're in this position where they're chasing now, and that always has an effect in this league. So yeah, I mean, it's still a great result against a very good Moreirense team. They're in four for a reason. They've got great players, good defenders. I really like their attack, particularly Alan, the attacking midfielder. So, this was never going to be a straightforward game. This went 3-4-0. I think just the way the goals came throughout the game, and that sort of frustration we sort of saw from Sporting, sort of has been what we've seen a couple of times so far this year.
I think that's a fair point. I don't know. I think I have a slightly different perspective, and Andrew, I'm interested to get your perspective on that aspect of it as well, because you're so right, Barney. It was a difficult game where Sporting had to work hard to break down the opposition. I have to say, maybe I have the kind of privilege of being able to look at it this way because I'm not a Sporting fan and I don't sit and watch this game and build up that frustration. And I did actually think they played very well. I thought they created a lot of chances against a very difficult team, and they were, I thought, very persistent at trying to unlock the door against a very well-organized team. And I think Rui Borges perhaps deserves a bit of credit for this game, because I think this was a game where it kind of showed that, Rui Borges is kind of seen as this sort of inferior manager to Amorim, and perhaps this guy who's forged his path in the lower leagues and maybe doesn't have the tactical nous of the top managers. But I thought in this game it showed that Sporting, well, I found them fairly relentless at constantly trying to open the door, and I thought Pedro Gonçalves and Trincão actually had very, very good games. And you are right that perhaps, if Luis Suarez had able to finish one or two of the other chances, or the goalkeeper hadn't been quite as prestigious in this game in terms of how well he played, then it could have looked very different. But I felt like they didn't necessarily give up, and actually, scoreline aside, purely in terms of the way they played, I thought it was quite successful. But yeah, Andrew, I suppose you can look at it from both perspectives.
Definitely. I agree with you on this one, Albert, that Sporting were really good. I think you can see Rooibos kind of he seems more comfortable and confident in what he's doing and the adjustments he's making in the game. This was a very well-organized Moreirense team. They were set up to make life difficult for Sporting. I don't think they were even set up to try and do much offensively, and they didn't really. They had one or two sort of little runs, but they really struggled to find any offensive space. But Sporting persisted, and Rooibos was a point. I think it was, I can't remember exactly when, but he takes off Kocsis, really brings on Morita, and you can see he's telling Morita, okay, you play further up, because Kocsis really. Maybe he instructed him to, but he wasn't going up and occupying that space further up, and that made it way more difficult for Moreirense, because then it was just overloaded around the box, which it was already. And Moreirense, a lot of the times, what they were doing, they were playing with five at the back. Vasconcelos was sort of tucking in and making it way more difficult for Sporting when they were attacking. And yet Sporting kept finding space, lots of space. Pedro Gonçalves was finding space. Trincão was finding space. Even Quenda, that they did really well to continue to try and find solutions to this very defensive, a good defensive performance from Moreirense. I think there's probably something to be said about maybe Sporting don't look as dominant because there's maybe some players that don't contribute to the attack if they should. We've spoken about this before, about the fullbacks and about maybe they are not as good in an attacking sense as they should be and as they could be. I like the guy. I like his sort of hardworking personality, but Ricardo Mangas is a good example of this. I would have much preferred to see Maxi Araujo, who's just coming back from an injury sort of recently, and you saw as soon as he came on, he had that
Instant
great
upgrade,
chance.
yeah.
Yeah, and he had that great chance, which I was kind of like, yeah, you should have done a bit better with that, but that's kind of what you get from him. But good job from Sporting. On the Luis Suarez point, I'm a big fan of Luis Suarez. I like his tenacity, the way he presses. He's really physical. He gets in your face. He doesn't let the defenders have time on the ball. But also in this game, yes, I agree. He maybe should have done a bit better with some of the chances. He kept trying to go around the goalkeeper because he could tell the goalkeeper was having a blind day. He said, "I got to get around this guy because he's going to save everything otherwise." But then he also did what your striker needs to do. You get the chance, you get the penalty, you step up, and you put it away. And that's what he did. He did really well.
A hell of a penalty.
And yeah, one hell of a penalty, agreed. He's never going to be Gyökeres, no one will be. And maybe this is kind of a Gyökeres hangover for Sporting, where they had a guy that was always scoring, and now everyone kind of has to contribute a bit more, be a bit more clinical. I don't know. I'm not saying that's 100% it, but there's something in that probably. But I think Suarez is definitely there, a guy that needs to be starting. Even though Ioannidis looks all right, I'm not sure he's got any sort of claim to that starting position yet. He's going to have to do a lot to sort of get Luis Suarez anywhere out of this team. And then, yeah, Pedro Gonçalves, another good game. When he has a good game, he really has a good game. That is one thing about Pedro Gonçalves. And when he has a bad game, it's really bad as well. That's the two sides of pot. But otherwise, back to Morenes, I just wanted to say I felt like I was a bit disappointed in their output offensively. I think they could have, I mean, they could have done what they do already, try and sort of attack the central positions, and they were getting some joy. Vasco Sousa was finding space to run with the ball, even Alan Zinho, who's such a great quality player. But maybe they also should have tried to hit Sporting where it hurts, where they know they struggle. Things like trying to generate some set pieces, trying to get more crosses in the box. This is something that Sporting has struggled with this season. And if you're up against a superior team like Sporting, the champions, one of the best teams in the league, you need to sort of try and play to their weaknesses rather than your strengths. So I think they maybe didn't take advantage of that opportunity, and maybe they weren't able to because Sporting was so good.
Yeah, I didn't mind Morin's performance so much. It wasn't spectacular, but equally it wasn't, the performance of a lot of the smaller teams that we see go to the big clubs and really just struggle to create anything. I thought they showed that they did have some quality on the pitch, and I appreciated that when they were able to get maybe to either side of the box, they had, fullbacks who were willing to commit forward to overlap with the wingers and all that kind of stuff. Although the very, very fair point is that they didn't make any big chances in the game really at all, which is totally totally acceptable. It was really more of a game for them of trying to contain Sporting as much as they could, and they did a valiant job of that. But it was, yeah, there wasn't too many opportunities where you could say that Morenz should have or could have scored in the game. But nonetheless, a team having a great season. Bonnie, I don't know how much you've been able to see of them, but it is enjoyable to see a team like Morenz, and other teams like, for example, Gil Vicente, that will come on to doing well and disrupting the kind of top five.
Yeah, and they've over the past few years they've always popped up with occasionally put like a pretty decent team together. I would say perhaps the difference this year, judging from the first few games, it feels a little bit stronger this year. And I think we always mention Alan, but they've kept him now for a couple of years, and he gets better and better. I actually love the centre back partnership of 36-year-old Marcelo and then 21-year-old Gilberto. Like, but that's nice, and Gilberto in particular, I've really liked. So yeah, I think it's I though, and I always talk about Chetine. I think ever since we started this podcast, Albert, and I'd no idea about him, but he's always stood out for me as a really decent striker. So yeah,
When he first kind of caught my eye was when he was at Braga, and I think he that was probably too big a club at the wrong time for him then, and I think he wasn't kind of able to keep up with that side of it, where when he was playing at Braga with that the demands placed on him there, even though he was given opportunities. But I think he's done quite well since he's dropped down, and I'm sure, I don't know, Andrew, what you think, but I think he looks quite dangerous in this modern Ence team. And actually, he seems like, without wanting to damn with faint praise, maybe he's found his level a bit more at a club where he can be the key player up front.
Yeah, he's also improved his game from his Braga days as well. He's improved
Definitely.
aspects of his game that he did struggle with, but he seems like a more complete player now. He seems more confident, and I think that comes with time, being in the same team and being the kind of the guy they look to put the ball in the back of the net. And he's done that so well this season. He's one of the players that I thought, if he gets a half chance, it could happen. He could score a goal, and then Sporting could be in trouble. It didn't happen. But I thought, he's the kind of guy that also he can be quiet for periods of the game and then just pop up. He's got that sort of quality. Overall, this is a very good Moreirense team. I thought Vasco Sousa looked really good, and we've seen Vasco Sousa before when he was at Porto. He's a really good midfielder guy that knows how to run with the ball, knows how to break up play, and I thought he did well in this game, in a very difficult game, a midfield that was overrun, and he did pretty well. The praise in this game really must go to the goalkeeper because of what he did. I was a bit sort of thrown off because the kits were clashing like crazy. The goalkeeper was wearing the same color as his teammates, and I would have just, if I was the coach, I would have said, no, we are not doing this. That was the only sort of thing that was kind of driving me crazy during the game.
I've got to say, I love that Marin's away kit. That's
That
a
is,
nice
yeah,
one.
it's a nice one. It is a nice one.
Very nice indeed. Yeah, and I have to say, just to end on this game, a very, very enjoyable game. In game to watch. I thought, both teams have a lot of credit out of this game, and particularly to give them their due, Sporting, I thought it was an excellent, excellent performance. I mean, if they play like that against other teams in this league who aren't as well organised as Moreirense, I think we'll be seeing some pretty big score lines, and players like Pedro Gonçalves will have a lot more than just one penalty goal. So, a lot to be positive about. But gents, it's time. Maybe the moment that a lot of people have been waiting for. I'm not sure. Maybe people are tuning in off the back of our José Mourinho episode to hear how did Benfica do in his first game in charge. Well, he couldn't have hoped for a more easier game than away at the league's worst side in AVS, just to call a spade a spade. But it was positive nonetheless. It was a big 3-0 win for his side. And one of the things we kind of speculated a lot about in that episode, Andrew, would be what kind of changes he'd bring to the team, whether he'd be bringing in more creative players, more young players. Obviously, he hasn't had a lot of time on the training ground, but he did kind of the opposite. He actually played with one less winger than Bruno Lage did as Schlader made way for Sudakov. But I think, Andrew, it's probably too early to read into the kind of changes that he's making at this point. He has a very busy first 7 days in charge of Benfica. All that mattered was the result, and the early signs, I think, were positive of what we're hoping, or Benfica fans are hoping, Mourinho is going to bring, which is a lot of positivity, that kind of feel-good factor, and a little bit of box office as well. I mean, we saw some of the antics on the sideline. So I think we saw the early signs of what we expected Mourinho to bring to this team.
And the other thing he'll bring is experience, because he can look at what Bruno Lage was doing and trying to build here, and the experience that he has, the way he sees football, he can see what kind of adjustments will sort of result in improvements. Bringing in Sudakov, starting him, I think having Ivanovic play a little bit more tucked into the right-hand side, that was good as well. There was a few sort of small adjustments that helped Rios and Sudakov, excuse me, Sudakov have more space when they were in those central areas. I think Pavlidis getting a goal, very important, because he's kind of been struggling a bit. And I say struggling, I think he scored like maybe 3 goals or something this season, 4 goals. But by his standards and by the kind of player that he is, he was getting frustrated. You could tell towards the end of the Bruno Lage period, he was struggling to have a good game, to get chances created around him, put chances away. He contributed in this game with some assists. And Ivanovic, good performance. He still looks like a striker that should be playing on his own. But you think he's probably learning some things while this continues, and trying to learn from Mourinho, because if anyone can teach you how to change the way you play, it's going to be Jose
Very true.
Mourinho. Good performance in the midfield. I mean, it's hard to really tell whether or not this is some big, new chapter and a turning of a new leaf, because they were playing the worst team in the league. They were playing an obvious team who, by their standards, were actually not too bad, but was still not that great. So it's we're going to be able to tell from the next game. And of course, they play Rewalf tonight, who we spoke about at length about being rather toothless. So we'll see what happens. But as for Jose Mourinho, just what I saw on the touchline, he seemed really happy to be there. He was wearing his little suit, which I don't remember him wearing. That when was the last time he wore a suit on the touchline? But when he was coaching in Portugal, when he coached Porto all those years ago, he always wore a suit. That was his uniform on the touchline. And so I don't know if it's something like that, like, this is what I wear when I coach here. Oh, look how serious I'm taking this kind of thing. But also, he seemed really happy to be there. He seemed like himself. He was getting agitated by certain things, which is exactly what you want. You want that sort of character of his to always be on display, and that's where you get the sort of box office moments. But I also think it's how you get your players to sort of buy into what you're doing. And that's Mourinho's all about sort of psychology and mentality. And there's so much of that within the way Mourinho coaches, and everything he's doing, he's trying to get his players to buy into what he wants them to do. So yeah, I mean, they created more chances than they have in a while, this Benfica team, against a bad team, sure, but they created, I think, six or seven, really good chances, some good goals, some good performances. Mourinho will say, let's build on this, more of this, onto the next one, and let's see where we get to. But this, if anyone thought it was going to be a sort of, a slow start for him, which it could have been, when they struggled to score in the first, I think, I can't remember when the first goal went in, but there was a moment there where we were thinking, wow, this is taking a while for a goal to go in against RBS, right? But they got the win. It was emphatic in the end, and yeah, good for them.
I think it's I think the antics on the touchline were kind of almost the best part of the game, because it was that kind of Jose's back, he's kind of give us that feeling that we all wanted. But you're right to point out is, I mean, as I said at the beginning, he wasn't really able to make any change because he's had what, one day on the training ground with this side. It's really tough. It's a very interesting kind of opening schedule for Jose, because he had that first game after a couple of days of being in charge. He's playing Rio Ave tonight, which is only a few days after they played at the weekend, and then they're playing again on Saturday. They've got Gil Vicente, currently fourth place in the league, so that will be a tough game. And then they have the small matter of Chelsea in the Champions League and Porto in the Portuguese league. So it's a crazy opening period, really. I mean, I wanted to ask you, just like, what do you think success would look like in this period? Because I have to say, that opening win, very, very important. He had to get that win. I mean, for what it's worth, I think Bruno Lage's side would have won that game as well, to be fair. I think it's a very winnable game. But Rio Ave could be a little bit trickier. Gil Vicente could be trickier than that. And then it's two very, very difficult games. He's obviously going to have a huge honeymoon period. But listen, I think he's going to need, he we just, Benfica fans need to see that shift in mentality and that positivity. So they're just desperate for positive results at this point.
They are, and the Benfica fans have very high expectations, no matter what. And then you bring in a coach like Mourinho, and then those expectations go up. And
Absolutely.
so I think success is going to be, they're going to look at it and say, look, we should be winning every league game. They all expect a win from the Rio Ave game. They'll expect a win against Gil Vicente, which, let me tell you, that's not going to
Not
be
going to be
easy.
easy.
They'll expect something from Chelsea, maybe not a win, but a point, obviously, after the opening game. They need to do something. They need to get something from that game, really. And then Porto, they always want to beat Porto, regardless of the state of the team. It's a big derby, and there's a lot on the line, because it's the sort of the big derby, but it's also the Mourinho derby. It's his big return, and they it's one of those tricky games that you could see, Mourinho pulling something off because, it's written. The script is written sometimes like that. But Porto are also so good this season that, it's going to be tricky for them to get anything from that game. But he will be hammering that into his players' minds. And knowing him, that's he's already doing that. He's probably already he's trying to get them ready for that big game against Porto and probably the Chelsea game as well. It's two teams that he was at as well. I think for him, success realistically will be getting a point at Chelsea, getting something at Porto, maybe a point, and then Rio Ave and Gil Cent, he has to win those. I think that they'll be quite happy with that. And he'll find his way to sort of kind of distract people if it doesn't quite go his way. He's very good at speaking to the media and making it about himself and taking the attention away from his players, which, is very good. Sometimes your players need that because the media can be a lot, especially at a team like Benfica, where the Lisbon media are all over them all the time. That's how I see it. I think it's exciting times for the league. I think there's, like I said, a lot of eyeballs now on the league. I wonder how many people are watching the City World game right now. It's probably more than anyone expected, really. And that's just what Mourinho brings you. And ever since, I'm in Portugal now, as we've said, and the media, sort of the just news coverage and stuff, is all centered around him. And they're finding anything they can just to talk about him because he is that guy. And it's incredible to see that while I'm here, the amount of attention that he demands, really, because he does in his actions, in his accomplishments, who he is to this country. We'll see.
Yeah, that Clásico becomes such a huge. I mean, it's always a big game, but definitely since Mourinho's arrival, it's become a really huge game. And I mean, we shouldn't waste too much time on, not waste, but we shouldn't spend too much time on Mourinho. But just lastly, as a Porto fan, I don't know if you got a chance to see his sort of quotes about that game and about his like expected reputation, expected excuse me, reception at Porto, because he came out and said it, to paraphrase, he's right. He says his rivals are not Porto. He just works for Benfica now. So he was trying to be quite diplomatic, and he said he didn't expect any positive reception, which I think is probably for the best, because I don't think he's going to get it. But yeah, as a Porto fan, I don't know if you had any reaction to those quotes.
It's typical Mourinho sort of to kind of say something very diplomatic. And the thing is, this isn't the end of it. He said this to then contradict himself at some point
Absolutely.
and maybe add a bit of bite just before the game. And this is all mentality stuff again. This is the stuff he does best. He's so good at this. So expect that. I'm saying it here now. In the lead up to the Clásico, he's gonna do it. He's gonna say something to sort of, bait the fans and try and rile up his own players, try and sort of get a reaction from them. We'll see if it works because he doesn't have the powers that he did before in this way. Let's see.
Very true, very true. Well, a big couple of weeks ahead for Benfica and for Mourinho. I did want to get Barney's perspective. Unfortunately, we lost Barney. Barney's got to go deal with some family stuff, but he wasn't able to join us on our Mourinho special, which you can listen back to if you want to get the thoughts of myself, Andrew, Kevin, and we were joined by Tom Condat to go a bit more in depth on Mourinho's arrival. So if you've not listened to that and you want to do so, check it out. But Andrew, I think we want to try and get some more games in from the league. And we did also have one of my favorite, and I think one of the league's best derbies this weekend, as Vitória hosted Braga in the Derby do Minho. When Sporting and Porto played just a few weeks back, we talked about how good it was to have a derby take place with two teams who were in great form at the peak of their powers, and how that offered us so much. Unfortunately, in this case, I don't think we can say the same for both teams. In fact, quite the opposite is true. Both teams far from their best, both teams in difficult patches of form. But I think it's fair to say it didn't dampen the spectacle too much in terms of the game and the derby atmosphere. I thought we were treated to quite an entertaining game. Braga, of course, took the lead through Fran Navarro before an equaliser from Mitrovic, which I think will be up there with the best derby goals this season. Definitely a great shot from outside of the box into the top corner. Vitória had, of course, that chance to go ahead. There was the missed penalty. The veteran Nelson Oliveira wasn't able to convert. And in the game, in the end, the game ended 1-1. A great spectacle, but yeah, like I said, probably from where these clubs are at the moment, a draw is probably a fair result.
It definitely is a fair result. It was quite an even game. Braga maybe created a few more chances and looked a bit sort of better rounded, but not by much. Braga are still going through some trouble. So I'm going to analyze Braga first because I think that's where I saw the most difference. Ricardo Horta being back in the team, starting in that position, in that more sort of central position, big difference. You know, he gives you a directness and a quality that they've been lacking, because without him in the team, and there was a game where he didn't play and neither did Rodrigo Salazar, and then you had nothing. You just had this meandering style of just passing the ball around and no one really knowing what to do, and people waiting for inspiration. And Ricardo Horta sort of, he makes his decisions very quickly, and that helps his teammates make decisions, and that's really, really a benefit. That's a huge advantage of having a player of his experience and of his quality. So I think you saw a difference with him in the team, moving Gabriel Martinez over to the left. I think that helped a lot. He looked a lot better. He didn't sort of produce anything great, but he looked better. He looked more comfortable on that side. And then Salazar on the other side. I think Salazar is one of these players that can play pretty much anywhere in that sort of midfield area. Fran Navarro, he looks like he's going to be the striker. He's going to be their main striker. Now they're playing with one striker. Oh, finally, you go from one to two to three back to
Back to
one.
one.
So we'll see how that happens. I was quite excited to see Nyakate and Lagabielka start together because they haven't been able to. It's out of necessity because Paulo Oliveira is injured, but they look pretty good. I think that's kind of the best centre back partnership. That's the one that they should stick to going forward. And then Hornacek again. We've spoken about Hornacek a lot this season because he's been called in a lot to save Braga. And he did it again with that penalty save. That was one heck of a penalty. Not placed very well, but the power behind it, usually that gets past the goalkeeper. And he made his mind up and he really, that was a fantastic save. And he saved the day there for Braga, because I think if they lost this game against this Vitória team, it's looking tricky. It's looking tricky. As for Vitória, they were set up really well. I mean, Luis Pinto is a really good coach. We know that he's a very talented coach. And you could tell, even though they have this perpetual fire sale that seems to not stop at Vitória, where they're trying to sell every starting 11 player they can to whoever at any price, it seems. You know, I think if you and I put a few quid together, we could probably get a player. We could probably buy someone off them. We could have a fifth mic in this podcast. Nelson Oliveira, fifth mic,
Oh,
if we
yes,
wanted.
please.
But despite that, he's found a way to sort of make them difficult to break down. I thought it was some good performances, maybe not as free-flowing and as exciting from Vitória as we've seen in the past. And I think Nelson Oliveira will be disappointed that he didn't do better with that penalty, because he just decided to blast it instead of thinking about where he's placing it, thinking about the goalkeeper. He's a very good goalkeeper in front of him. And when they needed him, he kind of choked a little. And they didn't really create too many chances after that penalty as well. I thought Arcanjo looked pretty good. But overall, I think just a point that Vitória will be happy to have, despite them playing at home, just because of how difficult it's been for them recently. And yeah, we'll see where it stops for them, because I don't want to analyze this team too much, because you don't know who else is going to go. You don't know if this is it, and can we start looking this as their team going forward. But yeah, a good point for them. I guess a very good team. And yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting to look at to compare these two teams, because obviously both teams having their issues at the moment, but I think both teams having issues in very different ways. To start with Vitória, I mean, you're right to point out their issues are coming more from the squad building, or well, the fact that, like you say, they're just selling all of their players. And then when you look at the types of starting 11s that they're able to put together, you know, it's kind of understandable that they're struggling because the quality just isn't quite there. I mean, I did see an interesting quote from the president of the club after the two sales this week, two further sales this week, where he says we need to build a team of young, hungry players, which to me sounds like a president trying to spin his thing of saying we're going to be starting the U team, basically, which is, you know, it's not an unreasonable thing to say. I agree that youth and focusing on youth development is not a bad thing, but yeah, I mean the squad is just, unfortunately, I don't think full of that many high quality players at the moment, and it's, you know, it's not like players are underperforming. I mean, you look at the lineup today, Silva, the winger, who had one or two chances, played okay, but I don't think he is really that high a level of a player, and I don't think he's underperforming particularly. He just doesn't quite have the quality. Same for Arcanjo, a player who can show moments of class and quality, but there's never been the consistency there. I like the midfielder Benny McKendy, who's a good player, but ultimately this is a team of players who've perhaps not fully developed yet, not shown the consistency yet that you might want to see, and suddenly they're kind of relying on each other to propel themselves forward in a way that I think is probably a little bit beyond them without, you know, a little bit more experience other than Nelson Oliveira, who, you know, we've already discussed. So I feel like for Vitória, it's a bit difficult, and the manager's doing what he can. I don't think the manager's underperforming, but yeah, it's been a very difficult period for them with the sales and stuff, and I just don't think they're able to put the starting 11s together to compete, even with quite a weak Braga team at the moment.
And what will happen is Luis Pinto will be the scapegoat. If
Yeah, true.
it starts getting worse, they're just going to say, well, he's going to have to go, and let's see if we can get another guy in to sort of try and steady the ship. I mean, who we haven't mentioned is Rodrigo Bascal, who had a very good game, very good centre back, and he's a player that I bet you if they get the chance they'll sell him, but they shouldn't because he's good. He was one of the best players on the pitch. They do have some quality players, and but then what happens is the players that are left behind, players that maybe aren't ready to play for a team at this level, they struggle because I think Silva really did struggle in this game. And then Arcanjo looks good, but that's because there's not much else happening. There's no one else really bringing that sort of quality and that flair, and that's going to keep happening. You know, if he can find a way to keep getting a tune out of this team, then fair play. And he'll get the president out of some hot water, because I think, you know, he's probably hearing it at the moment. But this is something that they've done every season. We've spoken about this at length, you know, the amount of times Vitória build a half decent team and then, you know, just disappears after a season or two. And I don't know when it's going to stop. And it's a shame because they have one of the best fan bases in the country. And I feel like they definitely deserve better.
Yeah, 100%. And I know we have discussed Braga quite a lot this season, so I don't want to dwell on that too much. But just, I think probably their most balanced team of the season so far in this game. It was a lot more kind of. Yeah, it made a lot more sense than some of the lines we've seen previously. I mean, even, you know, at the back, like you say, Nyakate and Lago Bialk, nice partnership. Leonardo Lello's been a creative outlet. I enjoy seeing him play. Victor Gomes, I mean, he has shown that he can be a good player. And, you know, I think so he's probably their best option at right back still. So, you know, I'm not going to moan too much about that. Fran Navarro leading the line, I think, suits him. Ricardo Horta, he needs to be given the responsibility and the leadership, and he will deliver. Rodrigo Salazar, a player I like very much. I mean, the midfield partnership with Matinho and Gorbi, I always find a little bit lightweight. Perhaps I would prefer to see perhaps a kind of, I mean, listen, Ali Al-Masrati, someone, not that player, he's never coming back, I have to let it go. But do you know what I mean? More of that kind of player in there, that physical presence, perhaps more of a destroyer in there than those two on their own, for me, doesn't quite work. But ultimately, you know, I think it was a little bit better. It was a little bit more balanced. I guess my question is, after weeks of kind of basically assuming that Vicens was on his last legs or on his way out, is there now a possibility that he does get this right, that the team does gel a bit more, because they weren't terrible. I think you're right to say they have been really poor. They weren't terrible, but the fact remains that the performances recently and the results is, I think it's three draws and a loss in the last four games. It's not good enough. So, you know, if it is going to work, it has to start working quickly. But I think he's already been given quite a long time.
Just before I touch on that, the midfield point you bring up is a very good point, because it's one of those things where, I mean, a few weeks ago, we were recording, and I sort of have this thought in my head that maybe the best midfield two is not Gorbi and Moutinho, and maybe there's a world where Moutinho is not in the midfield,
Yeah,
and that feels so weird to say,
it
because he
does.
is such a fantastic player. He's a legend of the league. He's one of my favorite players ever to play in the league, and to say that he's maybe the guy that should sit out and Florian Grillitsch should come in maybe alongside Gorbi, because I think that might give you a bit
Yeah.
more balance, a bit more physicality, because I don't think a Moutinho and Grealish midfield would work. I just think it's not mobile enough. I think it's not enough legs in there. So that's a good point, and I think right now it's kind of still working. It could improve, and we'll see if Grealish shows Vincent that he needs to be in the team, because maybe that could be an issue as well. But as for Carlos Vinicius, I think now he's probably. I think if he was going to get sacked, he would have done already. Maybe there could be Antonio Salvador could be thinking about, oh, let's wait until the next international break. He could be sort of giving him till then, because a lot of times the presidents and directors of football and people that make these decisions, they tend to have these moments where they decide, okay, we're going to give him till this moment, whatever international break it is, and then see. We'll give him to December. Let's see. So I think he's probably got a bit more time, and if he can continue to improve and sort of put out a team like this, a more balanced team, we could see an improvement, and you could see them sort of start putting some results together, because they have a good enough squad for sure. This is Braga. They know how to build pretty good teams. This is as good a team as I remember in terms of the amount of players they have for each position. Maybe they're a bit light on the fullback position for sure, particularly on that right-hand side. I think, Victor Gomes, I like him as a right back. I think he's a good, like, sort of box standard right back, and he'll do a job in a lot of teams in this league. I just think for what Braga need him to do, he's not really equipped to do that. But I think Vincent has a bit more time now, and yeah, we'll see if he sticks to what he's doing, or if he brings Paulo Oliveira back in when he's fit again, or if he puts Horta on the bench again, if he starts putting different strikers in, because it seems like he was very experimental, and this was the first game where it looked like he said, you know what, let me try and use my football brain properly, and it worked. Even though they got the draw, I think they looked a lot better.
Yeah, there's not many players on the bench in this game that you think should have been starting. So
Definitely,
yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's quickly touch on a couple more games before we go. I mean, we mentioned Gil Vicente at the beginning of earlier in the episode. You know, they leapfrogged Moreirense into fourth place with that 2-0 win over Estoril the weekend. I believe I'm right in saying this is the best start to Premier League season in the club's
Yep.
history, with Cesar Peixoto at the helm. Very impressive stuff from them. It was a very dominant performance over Estoril as well. They limited them to very few chances, but they created good opportunities themselves. First half penalty from Pablo Felipe, who's in good goal scoring form. And then a late second from former Sporting Youth Academy product, Joelson Fernandes, after a very impressive cameo, I have to say, sealed the win. More disappointment for Ian Cathro's Estoril. But listen, Gil Vicente's start has been undeniable. It's very impressive. And, you know, good players playing well in good form, well organized. It's funny how these things seem to be so easy when they start going well.
That's exactly it, and this is sort of a culmination of players that are hitting their stride, getting really confident. I think Sergio Peixoto has obviously got his message across to his players. They seem to really understand what he wants them to do, and you got some of these players playing. So I mean, Pablo has been playing incredibly well, as good as I've ever
Absolutely.
seen him play. Estevez is. And he looks so good this season, Lucas Fisher. We've known him. We've known he's a good player for a while, but this season particularly, he looks great. They were, I mean, in terms of, if you look at the stats, it's kind of deceiving in this game. Gilles Vicente were the top team in this game,
100%.
like no doubt. Estoril have struggled, and I'll get into some of their struggles a bit more. But just to stay on Gilles Vicente, if they can keep this going, and it's going to be difficult because we've seen this happen. We've seen teams start really well, teams that you don't expect to start well. We've seen Gilles Vicente do it before as well,
Yep.
and then they just kind of, you know, it fades away because it's not easy. It's not easy to keep this going every week, but I'm really happy for Sergio Pochot, who I think deserved a break finally, deserved his ideas to start working, and he's worked really hard. You know, he's as a manager, he's very much like he was as a player. He's a very hardworking sort of individual, a guy that's maybe he wasn't like naturally gifted with all the sort of gifts, but he worked really hard, and that's what he is as a manager at the moment. I like watching the Gilles Vicente team play. They play some great football, and onto Estoril, I mean, defensively, they don't know what they're doing defensively, it seems, a lot of the time. They let chances build around their box so easily. They seem to always think that they are just going to outscore their opponents, and this is a thing that they've had already. You know, even last season we saw flashes of this where they concede a bunch of goals and then they score a bunch of goals. But if you play against a very like good defensive team like the Gilles Vicente team, because they are good defensively, Gilles Vicente, then this is what happens. You know, they didn't look very good. I think Ian Catherine needs to kind of start looking at what he's doing. It's not quite working like it did last season. And if he doesn't sort of stop figuring things out, he could be in trouble at some point, despite how good he did last season. Because I just think the league generally, especially in the middle of the table, it's very competitive this season. So he needs to start getting points on the board, and he start doing that quickly. And just to go back to the Joelson Fernandes cameo, I mean, I remember Joelson Fernandes when he broke through, and I remember he was so much hype around him. And again, it's one of those unfortunate situations where a young player breaks through, and it seems like he has the world at his feet, and the whole, you know, Portugal are just so excited about the prospect of this young player. I remember him sort of a cameo that he did against, oh, I can't remember what team it was, but I remember watching it in my parents' old house in Madeira, and I was just like, wow, who is this guy? He was 17 at the time, maybe 16 at the time, and I thought, wow, this guy is something else, and it just didn't really work out. Nothing's really worked out for him. He's come back to the league now, and good for him. Let's see if he can kick on, if he can rediscover his form, you know, rebuild his career. He's not the first, you know, and he won't be the last, a young, exciting player that sort of loses his way, or things don't go his way, or struggles a bit with the pressures of being a footballer, because it's not easy. But I think if you are going to rebuild your career, doing it at a team that's doing well, that's full of confidence, full of guys that can teach you and show you the way, is the perfect way to do it.
Absolutely. And I mean, forgive me, I might be wrong, but I don't remember him playing so far this season. So
No.
it's been a real kind of, I mean, he really burst onto the scene in this game, because I have to say it was an electric cameo. I mean, listen, if he can play like that consistently this season, that could be a huge boost for his career, because it was a very, very, a very impressive cameo. And for a team already playing well, to add a player like that to their ranks is a huge asset. I just wanted to have one last word on Estoril, because the biggest red flag for me, and feel free to disagree if you like, but for me, it's that they're playing worse with a better team. I mean, they got a lot of credit last season for the work that they did. And in my opinion, I look at this starting 11 with the additions of players like Ferro, not necessarily additions, but you look at the players like Lomanadze playing, Thiago Pedence playing at fullback, Ferro. They've still got João Robles, they've still got Rafik Gaetan, they've still got, well, they've got João Carvalho, they've got Begraoui, Holzgrove. That's a very good lineup of players for me. I think sometimes when we talk about teams like Moreirense, maybe we give the players credit, we say they're overperforming, but I think when you look at a team like Estoril, on paper, that's a very strong starting 11 for me. That's a team that should be performing much better than they are. Certainly, I mean, arguably on paper, that's a better starting 11 than Gilles Vicente that they played in this game, and they were comfortably beaten. They didn't have even half chances in this game. It was quite remarkable. So, you know, Ian Cathro obviously did a really good job last season. They started slowly then. Fine. They overcame it. He was kind of given the time, and he repaid that faith by building some really good performances. And then for me, they've added a bit more quality to the team and taken a step back, which for me is, that's when I start worrying. I'm not sure if you see it the same way, but that's the kind of biggest disappointment for me so far this season.
Well, yeah, I definitely see it that way, and that's why I was highlighting Ian Cathro and how he needs to find the solution, because I think it is down to him. I think he has this overly attacking philosophy, which is fine. I don't mind attacking football. Actually, I really like attacking football, but this is football, and we have to defend. We have to do other parts of the game, and I think he needs to try and find the solutions to these problems, because yes, he's got better players. He's either doing the same thing he was doing last season, but doing it worse somehow. Maybe not getting his point across, not getting the players doing the right things that he needs, or he's trying to do something slightly different and it's not working. I think it's the latter, because I see a lot of the same sort of patterns that he did last season, but it's just not working. It's not as working as well as it did last season. And there's also a thing about doing it a second time around. You know, you can have one good season where no one expects, but you're not going to have that second one, because they know what you're about now. They know what you're doing. They know what to expect. And that's also probably something to do with what's happening here. I would be worried, and I am, because I think they don't look very good. And they seem to be dropping a lot of points at the moment, and they don't seem to be improving every game. And that's what you want to see at this point in the season. You don't have to be perfect, but you need to see improvement every game.
Absolutely. And six games in now, you know, we're not one or two games into the season. All right, we probably should wrap up in a second. I do just want to give one last mention to probably the most entertaining game of the week. As Arouca came from behind to beat Nacional 2-1, there were controversial records for both teams. There was a missed penalty. There was a late equaliser ruled out by VAR. Just the sort of chaotic game that we've come to know and love from this league. But importantly, an important win for Arouca, who have been struggling recently. So I don't know if you saw this one, but I enjoyed it.
I love this game. I watched it. It was so fun. I'm a fan of both coaches, so this is found money for me. I didn't care either way who won. but I thought Nacional started the game better, although Arouca had some good early chances. Nacional started the game better. They were more organized. They were able to create more chances. And in that first half, they were the more dominant team, for sure. There was a point in the first half where I think they had like a drinks break, or maybe someone was injured. I can't remember. And Vasco Seabra quickly called everyone over, and he was giving everyone so much information, trying to get them to see that they were under the cosh, because they were. They could tell, you know, Nacional were all over them. And he made a few adjustments because he's so smart, and you could see straight away they started playing a bit better. Nacional was still bossing that first half, and Thiago Magrin made some adjustments of his own. But it was two managers that are very good, very smart, very tactical, sort of going up against each other and trying to sort of outsmart each other. Arouca were more clinical. The red cards were, I mean, in my opinion, were a joke. I think I don't want to.
Like, if anyone's not seen it, it's are they both a case of a defender pulling someone but fouling someone and it being deemed to be a last man? But in both cases, it was so clearly not the case. It was almost comical.
Especially that second one. The second one was. I was like, come on, man, you have to. But anyway, two jokes of red cards, which I think did impact the game a bit for sure. And then there was the double penalty, right? Chucho Ramirez misses one, and then he gets another one. And I'm always a bit nervous when a player has missed the penalty and then has to take another one in the same game.
Yeah,
I'm always a bit like, because if he misses that second one, that's his confidence. That's four or five games to build that back up as a striker. But fair play to him. He steps up, puts it away. But it was one of those things where I think Arouca probably deserved it, because they didn't create as many chances, but they were more clinical. When they got their chances, they put them away. whereas Nacional works quite wasteful, although they did generate more chances. They did look like the team that, quote unquote, wanted to win more, but I don't really believe in that sort of wanted
No,
to win
yeah.
more stuff, because the game is the game, and you have to put your chances away. This was highly entertaining and a great advertisement for this league, where
Absolutely.
there's two great young coaches that just they threw everything at each other.
Absolutely. And this is why these games are worth watching. You know, it's not just about the big three. There's great entertainment to be had all across the league, as we attest to every week. All right, Andrew, let's leave it there. We should say a big thank you to everyone for listening. If you want to check out the show on Patreon, you can do so. Get involved with the community. It's only £1 a month and it helps support the show. You can find us on Twitter. You can find Andrew on Twitter as well. All the links will be in the description of this show. But yeah, I think that's leaving to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.